While in modern English, people of faith often call the reading of Scripture Bible study, traditional Jewish parlance refers to learning Torah because we believe there is always more to be known. The Torah allows for an encounter with the infinite mind of God and with the multitude of Jewish generations, and we are grateful every morning for this gift. Welcome to A Journey Through the Siddur, Episode 3, Learning, Judaism's Favorite Word. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's Journey Through the Siddur series is sponsored by Sherry and Neil Cohen in memory of their parents, Beatrice and Paul Milberg, and Harriet and Norman H. Cohen.
Several years ago, I had the honor of hosting Justice Antonin Scalia at Yeshiva University. In the private event before our public discussion, I took note of the fact that Scalia was the only justice on the court, at least in recent memory, to have cited rabbinic literature, while his Jewish colleagues, through their long and distinguished career, had not done so. This, I concluded, was ample reason to award Justice Scalia with the title of the Talmudic Justice. I believe Scalia was tickled by the idea, and it was one of many memorable moments in an unforgettable day. As I've noted in a written reflection on the moment, now that he is gone, I do believe that the appellation Talmudic Justice is an apt one. Justice Scalia was an admirer of those who ably engaged in eloquent argumentation, and he understood that the rabbis of the Talmud were practitioners par excellence of this art. Scalia also appreciated brilliance, and he knew that the vastness of the Talmud testified to the capacity of the human mind. But it's also worth stressing, as Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik has noted, that the rabbis of the Talmud, their brilliance notwithstanding, leave many questions unresolved, leave answers to be revealed in times to come. To put it slightly differently, as much as the rabbis had learned, they themselves believed that when it came to the Torah, there was always more to learn. And in truth, that is the spirit of the rabbinic statement that was cited by Scalia. The justice, in 2009, was criticizing his fellow judges who had, in his view, read too much into the due process clause of the Constitution. It was with this in mind that he cited what we traditionally call Pirkei Avot, and he wrote, "A Talmudic maxim instructs with respect to the scripture, turn it over, for all is therein. Divinely inspired text may contain the answers to all earthly questions, but the due process clause most assuredly does not." End quote. Turn it over and turn it over. This is the statement of Ben Bagbag in Avot, Hafochba vafochba dekulaba. All is in it. Ben Bagbag is communicating that as much as one has found in the Torah, there is always more to find, always more to learn. This itself is hinted in our Siddur, which every morning asks us to recite a series of blessings known as Birkat HaTorah, the blessings over the Torah, which celebrate our relationship with the Torah. These blessings are then followed by a series of verses, which are themselves called the priestly blessings, and then a Mishnah, a section of rabbinic law, so that our blessings about the Torah are immediately followed by a small act of engagement with the Torah, both scripture and the rabbinic texts that embody what we call the oral law. What follows then is a series of passages from scripture and rabbinic texts. They largely pertain to the sacrificial service and also include the story of the binding of Isaac, which took place upon Mount Moriah. All these remind us of the link between daily prayer and the daily offerings in the temple in Jerusalem. And then the final text cited before the next stage of the service is a listing of rabbinic exegetical methods through which new insights can be derived from sacred scripture. Bishlosh esrei midot haTorah nidreshet. There are 13 methods of drush, of deriving sacred truths that are there, hidden in the text to be discovered. The meaning is that as Torah is celebrated, we remind ourselves that there are more derivations to be discovered. There is always something left to learn. And the very parlance of Judaism in this regard is noteworthy. Observant Jews, young and old, experienced and ignorant, refer to Torah study as learning. And the choice of words appears initially to be an odd one. Imagine a Scalia, let's say, at the height of his career, taking down from the shelf his old law school textbooks and perusing them. Would one with any degree of accuracy say that Scalia was learning law? Surely not. One might say he is reviewing the law, engaging nostalgically texts that he already knows and learned long ago, but no one would say that he is learning anything new. Yet were a great rabbi to take a Talmudic tractate that he has studied tens or hundreds of times off the shelf and study it, he would not only refer to his actions as learning, he would pronounce a blessing over his study, designating it exactly that. One of the rabbinically ordained and composed Birkot HaTorah, Blessings Over the Torah, stresses that what Torah is all about is learning something new. We say every morning, Blessed are you, O Lord, King of the universe, who has sanctified us and commanded us to engage words of Torah. And make us habituated, Lord our God, with the words of Torah in our mouths. And let us and our progeny and the progeny of your people Israel all be knowers of your name, Vilomde Toratecha Lishma, and learners of your Torah for its own sake. Blessed are you, O Lord, who teaches Torah to his people Israel. Hamalamei Torah Lamo Yisrael. So we say, in other words, one who studies Torah is not only studying, he is learning. He is encountering God who teaches us something new, who teaches us Torah, who teaches Torah to his people Israel. The choice of the verb learning cuts the very theological heart of what Torah study is all about. And this approach to the spiritual intellectual encounter not only makes Torah study eternally exciting, it also reminds us that in this endeavor, we join those in the Jewish past who learned the Torah from generation to generation, who learned something new, whose lives and discoveries in the Torah taught us something new. Generations that still left us, for all that they learned, unresolved questions that remain to be answered. And as we learn, and as we discover the insights of the generations, and the questions posed to them and about them, these great minds come to life, reminding us of how much we can learn as well. In a famous image, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik recalled experiencing as a child his father's shiur, his Talmud lectures, which focused so much of its attention on answering questions posed regarding the writings of Maimonides, known as the Rambam. Many of these questions were directed at the great scholar Maimonides, or Rambam, by another brilliant rabbi, Abraham ibn Daud, known as Ra'avad. So much so that Rabbi Soloveitchik as a child thought that Ra'avad was Maimonides' Rambam's enemy, and that his father, in answering the questions posed against Maimonides, was engaging in salvation of the Rambam of Maimonides from his enemy, Ra'avad. Years later, he described his childhood impressions of the shiur, of the lecture. He wrote, The Rambam was a constant guest in our house. In my young and impressionable mind, there developed a dual impression. First, that the Rambam was being attacked by enemies who wanted to hurt him, and second, that the Rambam's only defender was my father. I felt strongly that without my father, who knows what would happen to the Rambam. It was as if the Rambam himself were with us in the room, listening to my father's words. When the shiur was over, Rabbi Soloveitchik adds, the Rambam was comforted and smiled. I too was delighted. And Rabbi Soloveitchik further writes, I would jump from my bed and run to my mother and cry out the good news. Mother, mother, the Rambam won. He beat the Ra'avad. Father helped him. Look how wonderful my father is. And then Rabbi Soloveitchik adds that there were at times, however, that the questions posed by Ra'avad against Rambam's view proved too difficult to answer. He adds, but once in a great while, my father did not succeed. And despite all his efforts, the enemies of the Rambam defeated him. Although my father mustered all his strength, he could not save the Rambam from his detractors. Salvation did not come from the Rambam. My father would raise his head and sadly state, there is no answer. No one is capable of resolving these questions. The shiur ended with no explanations. A sense of despair descended upon all of us. I cried. Even the eyes of the Rambam glistened with teardrops. With a broken heart, I would walk slowly to my mother and cry out to her, Mother, father cannot answer the Rambam. What will we do? And my mother would tell me, Don't worry. Father will find an answer to the Rambam. If he does not succeed, then when you grow up, perhaps you will find an answer to the Rambam. End quote. In this simple and beautiful way, Rabbi Soloveitchik's own mother communicated to her child the importance of learning, and also the reminder that at times we do not have all the answers, that union with God and with those that have come before us can sustain us in the face of uncertainties, and that if there are some questions that are left unanswered, that is because there are new insights left to the next generation to discover. And this means that the Jewish people, theologically, will themselves endure for as long as there are questions in the Torah to answer, as long as there are further insights in the Torah to find, there will be Jews engaging in that endeavor. Thus, the blessings of the Torah, a very small part of the Siddur, testify to the essence of Judaism itself. Stephen Dubner, co-author of the bestseller Freakonomics, is the son of Jewish parents who had converted to Catholicism and had raised him in their newfound faith. In Dubner's 1998 memoir, Turbulent Souls, he recounts his later return to his Jewish identity. One of his turning points came when his then-girlfriend suggested that he visit a synagogue. Dubner did so reluctantly, as he tells us, and he felt, in his words, like an intruder, perhaps an imposter. And then the Torah was taken out of the ark. Suddenly, Dubner writes, quote, the air itself seemed to grow lighter, easier to breathe. And then he goes on to describe how everyone kissed the Torah. And he adds, a resonance, a gratefulness, a relief blistered its way inside me. It is the book they are venerating here. And he concluded his reflections with these words. The way a Jew greeted the Torah as though it contained everything he would ever need, everything that had ever been known or could ever be known. I am quoting only small selections from this passage, but which I think capture what we remind ourselves every morning about what it means to be a Jew. Every day, the Jew greets the Torah. While in modern English, people of faith often call the reading of Scripture Bible study, traditional Jewish parlance refers to learning Torah because we believe there is always more to be known. The Torah allows for an encounter with the infinite mind of God and with the multitude of Jewish generations, and we are grateful every morning for this gift. Interestingly, I've just learned that 2009 was not the first time that Justice Scalia cited the Talmud. A decade earlier, in United States versus Sun Diamond Growers of California, another Talmudic citation appears. As Justice Scalia's friend Nathan Lewin has noted, there, in a case involving bribery, Justice Scalia wrote, quote, "Talmudic sages believed that judges who accepted bribes would be punished by eventually losing all knowledge of the divine law," end quote. This is indeed a rabbinic statement found in the classical work known as the Mechilta, a statement cited by the great commentator Rashi. Yet a mystery is bound up in this citation, for as Nathan Lewin noted, in 2009, Scalia had several Orthodox Jewish clerks, but, as he adds, quote, "Who and what moved Scalia to cite Talmudic sages in his 1999 opinion may remain a mystery forever. None of the 8 law clerks he had between 1998 and 1999 appear to have had any background in Jewish teachings. Where did he hear the Mechilta's unusual admonition?" End quote. We do not know the answer, ladies and gentlemen, and that perhaps is a metaphor for our own message. For part of what the Siddur reminds us every morning is that when it comes to the Torah, no generation has all the answers. For in learning, we can take our part in what Rabbi Soloveitchik has called the Symposium of Generations, communing with the greatest minds of Jewish history and always learning that there will always be more for us to learn. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.